This is WSBT's Community Update on 96.1 WSBT.
Good morning, I'm John Hoffman. We're going to spend this week's Community Update show updating a series of stories related partly to public safety, some to economic development, just some stories that we haven't spent a lot of time on here recently. First up, we're going to update the primary elections that were held earlier this month. Democratic St. Joseph County Sheriff candidate Tim Corbett officially filed this week for a recount. He claims the votes were not correctly counted in that primary election on May 8th. The unofficial results had Metro Homicide Commander Corbett behind County Police Lieutenant Bill Redman by just 18 votes. That's less than a tenth of a percentage point. Redman had 9,059 votes, Corbett 9,041. The third candidate, Bill Thompson, had slightly over 4,000 votes. The St. Joseph County Election Board has since accepted provisional ballots. That lowers Redman's margin of victory from 18 votes to 16. Corbett's petition for a recount does not give any details on exactly why the campaign believes votes were incorrectly counted. St. Joseph County Democratic Chairman Jason Critchlow says all votes have been counted and he saw no issues that affected vote totals. He says the party respects Corbett's decision to seek a recount, but in his experience, Critchlow's recounts rarely, he says, change results of an election. Corbett's asking for a hand recount of the more than 22,000 ballots from all 225 precincts in the county. He deposited a $2,500 payment to pay for the recount. That money would be refunded to him if the results change in his favor. The next step is for a circuit court judge to decide on members of a recount commission and assign a day for the recount to start. It's likely to be weeks before that process is complete. Despite the expectation of a recount, Redman has said he is focused on November and the general election. The Democratic candidate is scheduled to take on Republican Paul Jonas, a retired U.S. Marine. He ran unopposed in the Republican primary. The winner of the November general election will succeed outgoing Sheriff Mike Grzegorek, who is term limited and must leave office at the end of this year. The threat of school shootings, like the one in southern Texas this past week, is leading many districts across our area to think about improving security. The South Bend Community School Corporation is among the latest to look into making significant upgrades. Like many other school districts, South Bend is turning to a different source of funding. The school board approved a preliminary bond resolution Monday. If passed, it would give the district about $5 million to put towards security and technology upgrades. The chief financial officer told the board this bond is in preparation for 2020 when changes to taxes at the state level cause the district to lose up to $10 million in funding. Investing in technology now could help the district save money. The money would also go towards upgrades in security. The need for the changes was discovered during the Focus 2018 discovery process. Among the needed changes, according to South Bend School's chief financial officer, Catherine Turk, secure entrances for buildings, security camera updates, and in some buildings, new fire alarm systems. She says many buildings have old energy management systems that need replacing as well. The bond amount at $5 million is low enough that it does not need to be voted on by taxpayers. The school board will make the final decision. Turk says taxpayers should not notice a difference in their taxes. There is a public hearing on the bond scheduled for June 4th. The auction of the Sears store at University Park Mall has been delayed. It was scheduled for earlier this week, but the South Bend Tribune reports the listing on Real Insight Marketplace, an online real estate auction platform, says the auction date was moved to May 31st. Non-binding preliminary bids were due May 1st for the 212,000-square-foot building. The new owner does have the option to lease the property back to Sears. That means the store could continue operating uninterrupted. Mall owner Simon Property had no further information on the auction. Sears said back in February that fourth quarter sales were down significantly, but it's still expected to report a profit of some $140 million or more, thanks partly to federal tax law changes. The Mishawaka location is one of 16 Sears stores across the United States that are listed for online auction as Sears struggles to stay afloat in the world of increased competition, especially from online sales. Last month, when an online article named South Bend the most dangerous city in Indiana from a crime standpoint, Mayor Pete Buttigieg fought back. We share here his interview with WSBT 22 News on Fox from April 18th, Bob Montgomery questioning the mayor.
We mentioned earlier that BusinessInsider.com came out with this presumably a story, in essence, if you want to call it that, looking at the most dangerous or violent cities in each state. There really wasn't a lot of explanation. There was no necessarily a buildup and not a lot of detail in how they came about this list, but nonetheless, it listed South Bend as one of the most violent, in fact, the most violent city in the state of Indiana. Now, South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg is joining us this morning. You question the legitimacy of this report, if you want to call it that. Good morning. What's your reasoning behind
it? Well, thanks. I appreciate the chance to address this because sometimes these internet sites come out with a story and people don't click through to look at the underlying data. Not everybody's going to take the time to look at what's in this. If they did, they would see that this was a report that only included three cities total in Indiana, and all it tells you is that there's a six-month period where we reported and addressed more violent crime than Fort Wayne and then Evansville, although it also specifically says you can't use those data to compare cities. So it makes it that much harder for us to get the real facts out there. And there's some important facts people need to know about crime and public safety in our city. One, that it's down considerably over the last 20 years, and that didn't happen on its own, which is why it's important for people to know it. Two, that there has been an uptick in the last year and a half in gun violence in America and here in South Bend. And three, that we're comparable to a lot of other cities of a similar makeup. We're on par roughly with Buffalo or Salt Lake or Philadelphia. And there are, unfortunately, many cities in Indiana that have a higher homicide rate, others with a lower homicide rate than we do, and we want to always drive it lower.
Specifically, when they talk about violent crime, is that the driving force, the homicide rate?
I think so, because it's frankly the only one that you can get an apples-to-apples comparison between cities. Some cities, when you have increased enforcement and increased effectiveness in law enforcement, that means more people call in more crimes, which means that your numbers go up. But it also means we're getting the job done more. The one thing that you can be pretty confident is always being reported in terms of the total numbers is homicide. That's why it's the one we watch the most closely. And we also look at the overall rate of shootings, trying to drive those down. What we're seeing right now is an uptick in shootings, but what a lot of people don't realize is that they're almost all cases where the victim and the shooter knew each other personally. That's why it's so important for us to get more police cooperation, where victims tell our police officers what actually happened.
Now the statistics certainly tell one story. The people who live in some of these neighborhoods that seem to be more plagued by crime, if you want to call it that, might agree with what is being seen here because of their scope of vision. What do you tell those people living in those neighborhoods about this issue, and when they might say, yeah, I agree with this, what this particular Business Insider finds?
Well, the statement that South Bend is the most violent city in Indiana is objectively false. But the sentiment that there's a problem with crime is obviously going to be strong anytime we're affected by it. And that can happen to your neighborhood, that can happen in your family. And that's why we work so hard to continue the trend of reducing crime in this community.
We're about out of time, but I need to ask you one final question. This is just another national publication that puts South Bend in a negative light, gives the city a black eye. Are you concerned about that?
Well, obviously, most of the national coverage around South Bend in the last couple of years has been very positive, but when you do get information like this, especially when it's misinformation, that's one of the reasons I believe I've got to snap into action and get the truth out there, because even though people can look this up for themselves, most people aren't going to take the time to click through all the numbers.
All right, South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg, thanks very much. Appreciate your time.
Thanks.
Another update now from about a month back. St. Joseph County Prosecutor Ken Cotter leads off.
The short of it is, law enforcement messed up. Law enforcement did not send these when we should have.
That mistake led to 478 sexual assault evidence kits from St. Joseph County not getting tested. The backlog was first reported back in December. Indiana State Police released results of a statewide audit of the kits. St. Joseph County had the highest number in Indiana of untested kits. Cotter said most of those kits, over 330 of them, had legitimate reasons for not being tested. But 83 kits did not have valid reasons. Cotter and his team say they are working hard to make sure those kits are dealt with and that this never happens again.
Some of the reasons were that a detective believed, or at least put in the report, that he had sent it to the laboratory, when in fact he had not.
Cotter says those officers no longer work with the Special Victims Unit. All 83 sexual assault evidence kits were sent to the state laboratory for testing. Cotter says he has two priorities. The first is holding perpetrators accountable.
The second thing, and just as importantly, is to ensure that victims understand that we do take this seriously.
It's hard for people to understand how much this really undermines any rape victim.
That's Linda Bakley, the CEO of the YWCA of North Central Indiana. Her staff offers free counseling to sexual assault victims. She said it can be hard to persuade a victim to complete a sexual assault kit, especially if she thinks it's not going to be tested.
It's not a pleasant process for a victim that's been traumatized.
Prosecutor Cotter says he's doing all he can to prevent this from happening again. He's adding new requirements for filing and more oversight.
We are every year going to re-audit all of the cases involving sexual assault kits to ensure that they are sent to the laboratory for testing.
Bakley says she's appreciative of the efforts.
I appreciate that the Ken's office has taken the steps that they have to look into what really happened here, to try to drill down and find out who's accountable, and to try to ensure it doesn't happen again. And I think at this point, that's all we can do.
Cotter says he and his office do take sex crimes very seriously. He said about a third of his office is dedicated to them. Cotter says he knows the situation has eroded the public's trust, but he says he hopes to regain that trust. Finally this morning, as the senior PGA championship in Benton Harbor at Harbor Shores winds down, a look at some of what it takes to get the course ready for the competitors. Here's WSBT 22's Pete Byrne.
There's no right way to set up a golf course, but there is very much an art to it. And it's one that Kerry Haig has mastered over many years. Haig has spent the last week in Benton Harbor, once again setting up the golf course for the KitchenAid Senior PGA Championship. And as the world's top senior players arrive in Michiana for this week's event, they'll find a test waiting for them, unlike any other.
To be honest, the more times you come to a venue, the sort of, in some ways, the more exciting it is, the more interesting.
Good luck finding anybody who knows the intricacies of Harbor Shores better than Kerry Haig.
So this would be, you know, 13 or 14 paces.
For nearly 30 years, he's set up every major competition conducted by the PGA, including the three championships held at Harbor Shores in 2012, 14, and 16. As he returns this spring for his fourth KitchenAid Senior PGA Championship, he walks the familiar terrain looking for a fresh perspective.
I try and look at it with fresh eyes each time we come back and see, you know, is there something, an area we may have missed that would be good to test the best players in the world? And, you know, certainly this green here on 11 is a wonderful example of an interesting green, yet it's one of the smallest greens on the golf course.
At 144 yards from the back tee, the 11th hole at Harbor Shores is the shortest hole on the golf course. But despite the lack of distance, Haig sees infinite possibilities around the green.
Standing on the tee, you're really looking, all you see is the bunker and the flag sticking out of it.
So in reality, it's an inviting hole location, but visually very intimidating at the same time.
Totally intimidating. But at the same time, there's certainly chances, depending on the hole location, certainly for birdies, if not for hole-in-one.
What's the biggest trouble on this hole? Is it the pond or is it these bunkers here?
Well, they all come into play for any golfer. Depending on the hole location, if it's on the left, then these bunkers on the left certainly come into play. And, the wiser player may play more for the middle of the green. Similarly, on the right-hand hole location, it tempts you to go straight at it, but you're certainly bringing this difficult right-hand bunker and the water into play. And our aim is really to try and understand and know each green as well, if better than the players do.
It is that knowledge that allows Haig to set up the golf course in a way that's challenging yet fair, while at the same time generating the kind of excitement that makes for a great championship.
That's what I was saying to Pete. I think it's a harder putt up that going up the hill to the left.
Right.
Because I enjoy trying to bring out the best in every course, and that's the sort of the fun part of it to me is every course has features that if you can bring out those, you know, special parts or make players think, that's the part that really to me is a great part about this job, that you can bring out parts of the course that you didn't realize were there.
Which is the real magic of Kerry Haig's craft.
Have you tried this putt?
It's an intricate blend of art and experience. And when executed correctly, it creates fantastic theater for the fans and identifies a worthy champion come Sunday.
I think it's a terrific hole. It's, as I say, because of the variety and the movement around the green, It's such a pretty hole hitting from the elevated tee down to this green over the water.
The final round of the KitchenAid Senior PGA at Harbor Shores today.
The views expressed on WSBT's Community Update are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the host, WSBT Radio, its staff, or management. Join us again next week on Community Update on the Sports Leader, 96.1 WSBT.